It's not often, and if you listen to me every night, boy, you know this, it's not often that I'm impressed by having anyone on the air. And so last night I read The Cool Gent, The Nine Lives of Radio Legend Herb Kent, cover to cover. And then, of course, I had to dig out old Herb Kent air checks, and including one, by the way, that they're now selling on eBay. Herb will be pleased to know he's going for $10 plus shipping at the moment from February 26th of 1965. But that said, John came and said, "Are you streaming?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm streaming," because we had 221 people online, which is a lot, actually, for our online audience, as well as everybody on XM, just waiting since I promoed that we'd have Herb on. So, you know, you're streaming? Yeah. You're putting this on DVD? Yeah. You got everything set up? Yeah. He didn't give me the checklist. Did you bother to, set up any of your opens? Everything that's computerized and all at this point. And I said, not a thing. All right. So we'll do that while I'm talking. But hopefully you are well aware of Herb Kent, the Cool Gent, if nothing else, because you've heard me mention him from time to time. This is a guy who was so cool, groups named themselves after him. And I think D. Clark, more than anything else, probably just to ride on his success. Because after all, if you were known to be a friend of Herb's, well, that was good enough for everybody else in Chi-Town. Acts included his language in their lyrics, and we've played the accents a lot, and will again, but clearly they're not the only group. Now we'll find out what a Fesnecki is, too, let alone a fern. Probably no one in any radio market has ever made as much an impact on radio, soul radio for sure, and really radio in general. No individual has done it as long as or has had an impact the way Herb Kent has. And when I say as long as, we're talking from the 40s to today. He's seen radio move from being the only game in town to carving out a niche for itself against television to differentiating itself formatically when stations could devote themselves to super serving any one group of society, through the glory years when radio created that one-on-one bond and truly reflected communities, to the transformation in the 60s from what was clearly entertainment to what became activism, where it not only reflected its audience but led it to today. Yeah, today. Where is it today? Maybe we'll get to that. To put the best spin on it, radio is one of many sources of entertainment and information, which, you know, in many ways makes it harder to stand out today. But stand out, Herb Kent still does. And in a minute, you will hopefully meet the Cool Gent.
The Ronnie James Show.
And at the sound of Johnny Taylor, we welcome Herb Kent, the Cool Gent. Thanks for taking time out to join us.
Well, thank you very much. It's interesting listening to you talk. You can really go.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, while I'm setting up two computers in the process, but it's easy to talk about you. There aren't that many living legends, and clearly you are one. And, you know, one of my greatest frustrations, Herb, is that today online, everything's there. Every minutia about minutia. And when it comes to radio, you know, radio from the beginning to the end. And, you know, all that said, there is no real decent representation of great soul radio, which to me is what has enthralled me all along. And, you know, I'm so glad you wrote the book, and we've got a link on Raleigh.net to a great price from Amazon. But this is a true story, and you're in the Radio Hall of Fame, and thank God for that. And I think that was 1995, right?
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Thank God. Well, an executive, and I won't mention who he is, but actually with a big Hall of Fame right there in Chicago, called me about a year ago and said, you know, we'd like to add some of the soul jocks. I said, that'd be great. And then he said, we don't know who they are. And and that was so amazing to me that something like that could be under the radar. So firstly, thank you for writing the book.
Well, thank you. I just I felt I had to write it. My co-writer, David Smallwood, I've known him, I guess, about 25 or 30 years. He said, man, one of these days we're going to have to write a book. And it was his inspiration that started me. And we really started 5 years ago. I would sit down. I felt like I was in a psychiatrist's office, and I just start talking. And as I talked, he wrote and recorded and wrote and recorded, and we finally got it all together. And it's just something I felt I must do.
Well, I'm...
Go ahead.
I'm so glad that you did. And, you know, the interesting thing that I found in this book, and I'm sure it was cathartic personally, but it's also really going to be historical in a world where there's not much out there on it. But when you were interested in radio, you were like, I think, all of us who were true radio hounds. We were not at a grade school before we knew this is it. This is what I got to do. The difference is, in my case, I was listening, say, in the 50s. And by then, television was already on. Radio was already formatic. I was listening to disc jockeys. You, however, you were listening to radio when it was the only game in town. So what was What was it that captured you?
Well, I don't know. I had a vivid imagination. You know, the soap operas that we see on TV, they were on radio back then. They had the... Little Orphan Annie, Captain Midnight, these are 15-minute serials that came on, you know, and they went from one day to the next day, and like Little Orphan Annie would fall off a cliff, and would she die, would she live, and the next day maybe she was caught by a net by a hermit who lived in the ocean or something like that, you know. Yeah. And I could just see these things as they happened. Of course, they had I Love the Mystery, had mystery shows. I just loved it, and it just made so much sense to me. And, of course, you can understand it because you love radio, too.
Yeah.
I took it a step further. I loved the way they looked. Mm-hmm. I loved the way they smelled. You turned them on, they had the tubes in it with the dust on the tubes.
Sure.
And then I began to build crystal sets. I don't know whether it was a calling or what it was, but it was just consuming, and I still feel that way about it today.
You know, when I read the chapter on the Wahoo Man, I have to say that it took me right back to when you would have been listening to whether it was Little Orphan Annie or Lights Out or something like that, because the Wahoo Man truly brought back that original theater of the mind. And I don't think there's anybody in Chicago is unaware of the Wahoo Man, but for the rest of the country, tell us about this fella.
Well, you're so astute, you know, you got it down, you know. There's a lot of similarity with the way you think and I think about this radio game, Theater of the Mind.
Yeah.
I was coming from a dance one night that, you know, we did records and we were paid to go out and spin records, you know, record hops and stuff like that. So I was coming back from this record hop with this guy and this lady. And we went to a place on 47th Street that's on the south side of Chicago. And they sold chili. And a lot of folks just loved it because you could go in and get a bowl of chili before you went to a dance. And after the dance, you could get another bowl before you went to bed. So we went there, and I had this car that was a used car that it was owned by a Muhammad Ali. And it had this little alarm system in it, you know, and that was kind of new back in the day. So we're getting out of the car, and we see these two beautiful ladies running down the street, being chased by a man and a little black dog, and they were just screaming and running. And I said, my goodness, well, they got away, you know. And I said, wow, wasn't that something to see? So we went in the restaurant, and we're sitting down eating the chili, and lo and behold, this man comes in the door that was chasing the girls. He let the dog outside, and he was very ugly. He had a brown hat on that was torn. He had an old gray coat, and he had a face that was had a lot of sores on it. You know, it was kind of runny. And he leaned over me with that face. I said, man, don't you let your face drip into my chili. And the owner says, you got to get out of here. You got to get out of here. And this guy, this old man, he says, I'll kill you. I'll kill you. And he ran out, and we said, wow, wasn't that something? So we finished our chili, and we went out, and this guy was still out there with this little black dog. He was singing the blues. So we got in the car, and we locked the door, and all of a sudden he rushed the car with a broomstick to hit the fender of this car. and I'd reach and hit this switch, because back then the alarm systems could be turned on and off inside the car at the switch, and the alarm went, wow, wow. And he said, wahoo, wahoo, that'll scare nobody. And he ran off down the alley. Well, this little guy in the car with me says, hey, Herb, that's good. We got to call him the Wahoo Man. So I just recreated him on the radio. And I got this guy who's working his way through college in med school to play him. Incidentally, the guy that did it, he is a multimillionaire now, doctor.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, and we're still friends. But anyway, we went downtown to the Art Institute, and they had a guy there who made stuff for Hollywood, and he created this rubber mask, complete with running sores and everything. So we then went to an undertaking parlor, and I know the people that owned that, and we got a public aid casket, which is a real cheap one.
Yeah.
So this guy's name is Stallworth. There's Dr. Stallworth now. And we got him to put that mask on and lay down in this casket. And we carried it from school to school. Carried it to taverns. And what would happen, in one instance, we took him to a theater, and we would play Bach's Toccata and Fugue, which is a very heavy song. And the lid would slowly raise, and the leg would come out with the gym shoe on it. And he would slowly rise and get out in this casket, and people would really scream. I've never seen anything like it. And there were six policemen on stage. They all drew their guns.
Oh, jeez.
And they said, we know you created him, but you need to get that blankety blank away from us before we kill him. And then he would run. We would always have a place where he would run and then disappear. And it was just the wildest thing. And it was the Wahoo Man, and I would have adventures on the air. And mothers would call up and say that their little kids peed on themselves and we should stop doing that. Oh, it was just wild. So after about, seven or eight months, it was just the biggest thing in Chicago. And finally, I had a note from the boss when I went to the radio station and says, we can't take it anymore. You must kill the Wahoo Man immediately.
How did he die?
I don't know what I did. I can remember we just made him disappear off the radio and disappear off the streets.
Yeah.
And it was done. In real life, this man, the police told me that they chased him in an alley. And one squad car went one end of the alley, and the other squad car went to the other end of the alley. And he had ran into the alley, but he disappeared. The squad cars met, and he was nowhere to be found. And we never saw him again. And that's a true story. It's kind of scary, but that part was true.
Yeah, that's the best part of it, that we still don't know. The Wahoo Man could be out there.
Well, he still may be alive. You don't know.
Well, when I read your description of him, and I remember hearing about him on the air, but it was so great to read it in the Cool Gent, all I could think of as you were describing the sores in the face, I said, my God, this is the original Just Say No to Meth character.
You know. It was, I guess you might have called it a Black Frankenstein almost, you know, but it was, some of the white jocks at WLS, I knew them, they called up, they said, please, Herb, can we let us mention him one night? I said, okay. You remember Barney Pipps on WLS?
Very well. Barney was a friend of mine until he died in Indianapolis, CFL,
yes.
Actually CFL, when he used to say, going to turn you into peanut butter. Yeah.
Well, was he on CFL?
Yes.
He didn't work at LS?
No, WCFL.
WCFL. Well, anyway, are you sure? Well,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Your facts are so accurate. I let him do it, you know. And I think for a night they had a lot of fun with the Wahoo Man running around on the white radio station.
Oh,
it was just wild.
And they, too, had 50,000 watts at night, you know, at AM 1000.
Yes, they
so
did.
That got out there. You know,
remember, they had a big battle between CFL and WLS. That thing was just something.
I think my favorite CFL time, though, was when Chuck Bloor brought out those wonderful jingles. The only station I ever heard that had a jingle for St. Swithin's Day. So, you know, a lot of... And, of course, back before that, you'll remember him, other than you, and I always cite you when people talk about great Chicago jocks, but the other one was Dan Sorkin.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're
whatever happened to Dan Sorkin? Did he do that that little serial about this...
Rose Bimler, yeah.
Whatever happened to Dan Sorkin?
Okay, Dan went out to the Bay Area, and then he was always a crazy man. He was in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, yes, I do remember. Yeah. I used to listen to him. He was so crazy in the morning.
Yeah.
He was running down the hall and doing all kind of stuff and jumping out of the window. This man was gifted.
Yeah. Well, in the same way that you are gifted, there's a handful of people, Herb, that really make an impression. Dan is still alive. He lives in the Bay Area. He lost a leg many, many years ago on a motorcycle accident and actually had a website. I don't know if it's still up there, Stumps Are Us, and it sounded so much like Dan.
He's fantastic. He's got to be about 85 years old or something.
Yeah, easy. And, you know, this goes back to a time when radio was not only theater of the mind, but also filled with personalities. It wasn't just limited to morning drive, as you well know. And, you know,
that's true, yeah.
When you first started out, you could, of course, pick all your own music. So for any disc jockey, you could become a personality by virtue of the music you played. Well, there comes a point, as you so well remember, when the music is picked for you. Now, at that point, that separated the men from the boys, because now you had to have a personality other than just knowing the music. And you were such a standout that way. I mean, the cool gent went from being cool because he knew the right records to being cool because he knew the right things to say. But what kind of a transition was that when no longer you were picking all your own songs?
Well, it wasn't pleasant, and it didn't hit me that much because I, of course, started doing old music, and they let me continue doing that. Today, the situation, I still do it, but they give me parameters. You know, I can play stuff from the mid-60s to, say, 1987. But I can't repeat any songs in a 5-week period. So I have this for a lot of radio stations have this program. It's called Selector. Different outfits do it. So that's what I do. So they manage to control and not to control. They manage to get the best that they can. And of course, it works. It really works in this modern day. So many jocks had a habit of playing the same record over and over again. The freshness of the thing has really got raised my listening audience. So, I remember talking to a couple of jocks from WLS, and they were saying that the program director would call them in and make changes in their program, and they wouldn't like it. But then they would say, "But by golly, my ratings jumped up." So, you know, your program directors, they're looking at it from a little different thing. It's always that kind of little battle, you know, between a DJ and a program director. But those guys, a lot of them are very gifted. And it's good if you can get a blend where everybody's working together, and that's where you get a lot of success. So today, I don't hand-pick my stuff. I can put it in Selector, and the records come. If I don't like something, I can move it around or get another one and replace it, and it works. It really works, but you're absolutely right. Back in the day, people bought their own records, and they played what they wanted to play, and that just went out. That with the format radio, that just went out the door.
And the interesting thing to me, as I say, is that when you're playing what you want to play, you know, you can actually not even be that great a personality because the music becomes your personality and you're known for what you play. But when you're on a radio station where everybody's playing the same thing, now you've got to differentiate yourself as a personality while you're still complimenting the music apart from the music. And
that's something
lot of the guys couldn't do, frankly, and you did. You managed to go from, you know, letting the music speak for you to having a voice that was almost independent of the music. And that had to be a tough transition.
Well, the biggest transition, I think even tougher than that, was the transition from being able to play everything you wanted to play and just sitting and talking and open the mic whenever you wanted to talk, in between records, over records, to the format. That was a heck of a transition. No, a lot of guys bit the dust on that one.
Right.
Because that was just too difficult. And fortunately, one of our assistant program directors, his name was Nighthawk. I don't know what happened to him. Mm. He saw I was in trouble, and he said, I'll help you. And he sat me down and taught me, you know, how to do format radio, which is you don't repeat anything, and sometimes you have to start with the call letters of the station. And,
yeah, right. The rules, sure.
Yeah, the rules. And you, and what you have to do is live with that.
Yeah.
And like I say, a lot of guys couldn't live with it, and they got the dust. But that was the format. This guy named Drake.
Yes.
Well, I guess he was in the Drake format. He was floating around in the swimming pool, and he fucked his thing up. And radio stations did it. And it changed the face of radio. It really did. That was the whole renaissance.
Yeah.
Drake format. And it's still around today in various forms.
Say it in 10 seconds or don't say it at all. Indeed. And sadly, we just lost Bill Drake a couple months ago. Herb Kent is with us.
Wouldn't that be wonderful to interview him? My God.
Yeah, well, I've done that. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. The Cool Gent, the Nine Lives of Radio Legend Herb Kent. If you go to Raleigh.net, you can order it right there from Amazon, a great price. It is certainly worth the read. And we're going to continue with, of course, we haven't even mentioned WVON yet, though that's a very big part of the story, and talk about a transition. So, and not to mention the fact this is a man who created a language. We're going to find out exactly what a Fesneki is.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Fesneki with a mellow fern. This is a huge Northern Soul record, and as you know, Northern Soul, parts of England where our obscure R&B oldies are huge, played in clubs and all-nighters and other venues, and I've always wondered, what on earth are they thinking when they hear, she's a cute Fesneki with a mellow fern? Of course, the rest of us are thinking, Herb Kent, the cool gent. Indeed, the Nine Lives of Radio Legend Herb Kent, the cool gent, is available all over the place. I've got a link at Raleigh.net to a great price from Amazon. So by all means, if you even remotely were a fan of soul radio, you got to read this. And by the way, I make this sound pretty past tense, and Herb is still on the air. Well, he'll be on the air tomorrow morning on WVAZ, V103, and Sunday morning as well. So it doesn't get better than that, does it? I don't think you can name anybody who has been on the air continually since the 40s and is still, as far as I'm concerned, very, very contemporary. That's right. He's got an audience who were clearly not alive when a lot of the stuff he's playing was out, who are learning to love it again, which is, man, that's about the best thing anybody can do.
The Raleigh James Show.
And we're talking to Herb Kent, the cool gent, the Nine Lives of Radio Legend Herb Kent. The book is out, and it's a very worthy read. Even if you're not a huge radio fan, it's a lot of fun to hear some of these stories. And, you know, one of the interesting things, as I say, Herb, is you've created your own language. So we have to, before we even get to the fact that you named them Dusties, we have to get to Fesneki. So what's the origin of that?
Well, before I tell you that, I just want to say you play some wonderful music. Those bumpers, I was just carried away.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yes. The first one had something like, my. And I didn't know. What, do you remember the name of that one?
Let's see. What was
Perhaps
it?
Not, because you might make
well,
not.
Well, no. I think I played Sad Feeling Cicero Blake. It's Your Voodoo Working, Charles Sheffield.
Yeah, that was Sad Feeling Cicero Blake.
Yeah, I love that song. And, of course, you certainly know Cicero Blake, because wasn't he in the Cool Gents?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
One of the first ones.
Yeah.
And, of course, the accent with the mellow fern. Okay, let me go to work on this. I was... They did that song because I talked about it on the radio all the time. So they wrote a song about it. I talked about ladies with the mellow ferns and the Fesneckis. I had a conversation. I can't remember where it was, but this one guy was there. He had served in Korea, I think, and then he kind of gone wrong, and he did a lot of time in the penitentiary, and he just felt like talking. And he kept using the term Fesneck. He says, what the heck is Fesneck? Well, that was my first introduction to what you called a beautiful woman, a Fesneck. In reality, I think it's in the a dictionary. It's some kind of obscure flower.
Okay.
But the way we use it, Fesneck. You know, that's a fine Fesneck. And then a cute Fesneck with the mellow fern could have... Use your imagination. Okay?
Yeah.
A mellow fern. There you go.
Yeah.
And that was, that stayed around for a long time. Cute Fesneck with a mellow fern.
Yeah.
And then.
Now, tell me, what weren't there for a while Dicknekies?
Dicknekies, D-I-G.
Okay.
Yes, but that never got to be too popular. That was. There you go. Supposed to be a guy.
Yeah.
But I wasn't responsible for that one, believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it did have some usage.
Now
and then we had some stuff like 10-2 double plus. That was when the CB radios were. You didn't ask me about that one, but I tell you, CB radios are very, very popular at one time. The country is overrun with them.
Sure.
And people still use them, but I became a CB-er, and I started to use that language. 10-2 double plus stood for signal strength.
Mm-hmm.
The old radios and ham receivers had signal strength meters, and it's like your VU meter,
right?
You know, and it goes all the way over. It's really too much in a radio station because it overloads, but... As far as the transmitting is concerned, it's really good. So 10-2 double plus meant that everything was really, really good double plus.
Yeah.
And we use that one. We use that one a lot. And just CB, CB lingo. I use that a lot. You know, what's your 10-9? Where are you? And I used to sign off and say a bunch of 73s to you.
Right.
And that, of course, means, if you remember, love and kisses.
Yeah, 73s and 88s. Remember that from ham radio.
73s and 88s. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. But, of course, the one disappointment, and you know where I'm going with this already, is okay. I was thinking I was going to find out who Mrs. Livingston and Michelle were, and you're not telling.
Well, I can tell. Michelle, sure. Why not now? When people stopped me, Michelle was the middle name of my daughter. Her name is Robin Michelle Kent.
Okay.
So, rather than put her name on the radio all the time, which is not the best thing to do, I would say Michelle.
Okay.
And Mrs. Livingston was a wonderful housekeeper who took care of us, myself and my daughter. My wife was a bit wayward. She was not home a lot.
Aww.
So Mrs. Livingston fed us and kept us.
Oh, that's great.
Unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago.
That's great. I'm so glad to know, because I always wondered, and the first thing I looked for was the book. I said, I'm going to find out who Mrs. Livingston and Michelle are, and you don't tell in the book. So that was...
Well, you know, I was... let me tell you, when I talked to the editor, I had more stuff to say. I said, we have enough.
Oh, man.
So, maybe I'll do a part two one day. I don't know. There's so many things to talk about. You can't talk about everything, and it's a choice, you know, when you write a book to use this or use that.
Sure.
And just make everything work so everything doesn't get in. Everything does not get in. And I didn't realize that until I wrote this book, and I imagine a lot of interesting books are the same way. And interesting as they are, that there's just not room to put everything. You just can't put everything in. There's so many things to put in.
Now, there's another interesting...
That was just one that didn't get in.
Well, now I know, so I'm happy. There's another interesting transition, too, much like we talked about the transition from television to radio formatics and all that. In the 60s, when WVON was so very popular, it went from a time of almost innocence, not that the times were all good, as we know, but almost innocence to reflecting the community, and a lot of the songs were about love and simpler times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the end of the decade, there was an awakening, and you go from being entertainer to almost being activist, and it becomes a fine line you're walking, because there's almost a powder keg going on behind you. And being an entertainer, how did you deal with that transition?
Well, that was interesting. You're absolutely right. It went from innocent, you know, bubble gum. Let's drink a soda with the same out of the same glass to Black Power. WVON, to me, when the dust of battle clears, I think they're going to emerge as one of the top radio stations that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they might compete for the top radio station that ever happened. It was, of course, bought by Leonard Chess, who was very astute with blues music. He knew the market. He knew the DJs, and it just so happened that we were the, and some stations try to emulate it, the most personable station, the most, we could tell folks to go stand on the steps of City Hall, and about 500,000 people would do it.
Yes.
And it was just amazing. How that happened. No station had ever done that before. And that, of course, went to civil rights, and we supported a lot of civil rights people and leaders. We used to broadcast live civil rights activities. One thing that we did, they put us in a trailer in Lake Meadows, which is a big shopping area on the south side of Chicago, and the idea was to see which disc jockey could stay awake longer. And that was really something. Our program director, Rodney Jones, stayed awake one day, fell asleep. And then he woke up. he was pulling a bottle of whiskey on a string up through the window to drink. I will never forget that. And we all went out one by one, and they had doctors to come in and look at us. Our blood pressure was dropping, and... I still suffer effects from that. I think I stayed awake about 2.5 days and I passed out. Mm-hmm. And I have memory blackouts, little ones from time to time that I think I got from that. But it was a worthy cause, because people came by. It was a civil rights thing. You know,
sure.
Black people were really fighting for their rights. And they would make contributions. And we had SNCC and CORE and a bread basket and stuff like that. So it was... We were in the forefront of that fight.
Very
and then when the riots came, we, of course, broadcast 24 hours a day and asked people to calm down, stop burning their own places. And we were influential in that, too. Folks would call in, gang leaders would call in, and we feel that we were just as effective as that as anybody in quelling that awful disturbance.
I agree. And that's a very, very tough position, because on the one hand, there's a certain amount of empathy to that. And as the community station, it right to your heart, you understand exactly why that sentiment's there. And on the other hand, you have to play the role of saying, this ain't the way to do it. And
absolutely.
That's a tough thing for to be heard, because the kind of riots we're talking about are born from frustration that, okay, if it's not the way to do it, well, then how the hell are we supposed to do it? You know, so it's tough to play peacekeeper and come out of that without becoming part of, quote unquote, the system. So if it weren't for people like yourself, and there were just a great lineup on that radio station, of course, Rodney Jones mentioned, and Purvis Spann. And others, but that too is quite the talent to be able to navigate that without coming out as on the other side. Now, musically, The Good Guys, as the WVON personalities were known, I'd heard that there was a deal with Berry Gordy where anytime he produced something, he sent it immediately to WVON before he released it to the rest of the country. Was that true?
That's partially true.
Okay.
He first listened to it at a couple of nightclubs in Detroit.
Okay.
And then if it passed muster there, he then sent the stuff to Chicago, so we broke the majority of all Motown records. We never got the credit for it. We never really got the credit for it, but I personally broke most of Smokey Robinson's records. Mm-hmm. Smokey and I are still friends today. Eddie Kendrick, I broke a lot of his stuff, and Eddie and I were friends. Every disc jockey had a favorite artist, and we did, you know, it was such a powerful station. This is why I say when the deal goes down, it might be the most powerful station it ever was. We had a record playlist, and people fought to get on that list because when we sent it out to the record shops, people bought from that playlist.
Of course.
All the way in Iowa,
sure,
Wisconsin, Florida, they wanted our playlist. And we even had records on there we didn't play.
And I know. Yes,
people,
oh, I know.
People would buy them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those days are gone forever. The real golden age of radio was in the 70s, and our station was smack dab in there.
Yeah.
I used to think it was the 60s, but it was the black explosion of music was the 70s, ending up, of course, with a disco, I think, in 79, and that ended it.
Well, certainly a lot more in terms of sales than the 60s, but it just had to be amazing that 63 to 69 to have Leonard Chess as an owner and Berry Gordy almost as a benefactor, not that there mm-hmm. wasn't something in it for him. In terms of all the stuff that was coming across that you were hearing before they were hits, in some ways it could be said you were making them hits, in other ways something was never going to be hits. Was there anything that you played that you said, I'm really surprised this thing ever became a hit?
Well, you know, you tried to develop an ear.
Right.
When a record is new, sometimes everybody knows, oh, that's a hit, that's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just a lot of gibberish, and you have to have a really good ear to know that it's going to be a hit. I don't know. Rodney had that ear. I think most of the stuff that came across, there were some things, of course, that were not hits, and they never lasted on the radio that long. Some things were just obviously never gonna be hits, but not many of them came through.
Yeah, occasionally there are those where you say, God, I don't hear it, but the public sure bought it.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. That,
you know, there are some that, and what I would do if they liked the record, I'd play it.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't listen to it, but because I didn't like it,
right.
I'd play it anyway, because that's a smart thing to do. I mean, if you don't like a record and the public likes it, you're crazy for not playing it.
Now, conversely, there are many artists who at least I'll hear and I'll say, God, I don't know why that wasn't an absolute smash. And one of them from Chicago that comes to mind is why Holly Maxwell never really, really broke out. But are there any in your mind where you're saying, here's somebody who should have been huge and just didn't make it?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Holly. She tried so hard. She sang with Ike Turner.
Yeah.
She was one of the Ikeettes. She lived on the South Side. She was a classical singer.
Yeah.
And she switched to rhythm and blues. I guess you have to get with the right label and the right promotion. Atlantic was a great label to be on.
Sure.
Chess. Old Town.
No, High Weiss, yeah. That was...
Labels out of Memphis.
Sure.
I don't, if we knew that, I wish I knew that formula, because I could be a billionaire, believe me.
You're so right. You're so right. Now that you're on every Saturday and Sunday morning still, and obviously you're playing quite a bit of Dusties, and even though you're not necessarily picking them the same way you would have in the past, I'm sure the listeners write in. Are there any records now that are constant request records that you're saying, boy, I wouldn't have thought that stood the test of time?
Not many.
Okay.
I can't...
If you had to pick your biggest request item right now from the 70s, because I know you're playing from the 60s, mid-60s on, what would be your number one request item right now?
Oh, I don't know. It would probably be a Motown record. Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Interesting.
A lot of Temptation songs. Still very, very, very popular today.
Yeah.
Throughout the course, you see the way the records came. They were mostly all hits. Some hit harder than others, and that's what made our station so popular. You know, you just rolled hit after hit after hit after hit. I can't say some things are, you know, this Tonight's the Night is one song. I'll bet he Wright that is. That is still played.
Yeah.
My Girl by the Temptations, still played. Fever, Little Willie John, still sounds good. You know, here's the deal on that. A good song is a good song is a good song. I don't care if it was recorded in the 40s.
Boy, I'm
Some
with you
Some songs
there.
just have it in the grooves. The minute you hear them, it's a hit, and they'll be hits forever, and that's just the way it is.
And that's the same thing about personalities, and that's why you, while you were popular in the 40s, are still popular today. That's what spanned the almost 8 decades now, and hopefully everybody will check you out tomorrow morning, and hopefully by the cool gent, the 9 lives of radio legend Herb Kent. And Herb, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you. It's been very interesting. You're a great host.
All right, hope to talk to you again. Thanks.
All right, thank you so much.
So Herb Kent, the cool gent, and indeed he is. All right, we're going to pick it up with trivia next hour. I'm ready to go. You betcha. And we'll have question of the hour. We'll have a bumper stumper. We'll have RadioLogoLand.com question, of course, and more. 2 Big Hours of Trivia tonight, Friday night on The Raleigh James Show.
It's The Raleigh James Show.